As I was researching for this message, I came across a story from a guy who recounted his childhood experience at a local swimming pool. During a game of Marco Polo, he ventured underneath the rope that separates the shallow end from the deep end. And this worked out okay. He was able to keep his head above water and continue playing the game by tiptoeing for a while. As he progressed deeper into the deeper end, he began to realize that he could no longer tiptoe and keep his head above water. So he would lower himself underwater, touch the bottom, push himself off the bottom, and go above the surface of the water where he would take another breath. And then he would repeat this process. And this worked out well for a while. But things would change drastically when at one time, when he went to push off the bottom of the pool, he pushed off and found himself entangled in the arms and legs of other swimmers who were swimming in the same area. He began to get disoriented. He began to not know which way was up and which way was down. He didn't any longer know where to go, and panic began to set in. Until he was able to grab the shoulders of some unsuspecting swimmer and pull himself above the water, where he came above the surface and gasped for air. And as he found himself gasping for air, this sense of relief set in, but also a continued sense of panic for about what might have been. Now, he then related that situation and that experience to times when he feels overwhelmed, times when he feels all tangled up, times when he feels like he's not sure where to go or what to do, and sometimes when circumstances simply leave him gasping for air because he just feels overwhelmed. Feeling overwhelmed is not a unique or an uncommon experience. Along the way, each and every one of us experiences a sense of feeling overwhelmed. For some people, it's just a schedule thing with the busyness and so much to do that they feel overwhelmed by the sheer busyness that they encounter in life. For others, it's the result of some type of an unexpected circumstance, like an illness or a job loss or something that leads you to this sense of feeling like you're simply gasping for air because of being overwhelmed. For others, it's simply trying to figure out what normal looks like after an unexpected crisis or a set of unexpected circumstances. For some people, this is a season. It comes, the circumstances end, and the feeling of being overwhelmed is over. But for other people, feeling overwhelmed is a daily tension, a continual struggle, day in and day out, never certain which way is up, feeling all tangled up, and wondering if you're going to be left continually just gasping for air. So if you've ever felt overwhelmed, or maybe if you feel overwhelmed right now, take comfort in knowing that you're not alone. It happens to all of us, and it even happened to Jesus. 3 out of the 4 accounts of Jesus' life touch on an experience that Jesus had very specifically, and the 4th touches on it in a more general way. But all 4 accounts of Jesus' life address a circumstance where he felt overwhelmed. The situation between he and the Jewish religious leaders of his day had gotten pretty intense and had continued to ramp up. And as Jesus and his followers gathered together to celebrate the Jewish Passover feast, the situation was about to come to a head. And Jesus knew it. He was experiencing the tension and the stress of what had happened, what was happening, and was what yet to happen. He was experiencing all of this to the point that clearly he communicates that he's feeling overwhelmed. But what Jesus does and how he navigates this sense of feeling overwhelmed carries a great deal of application for people like you and people like me, well, maybe even you and me, as we encounter circumstances and situations where we feel overwhelmed. Here's where we pick up Mark's account of this particular situation in Jesus' life. He says, they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. So as this situation intensified, as the circumstances ramped up, and Jesus began to feel overwhelmed, he made the intentional decision to put some distance between him and the environment that he was in. He and his followers had gathered for the Jewish Passover feast. And the room that they were in, he decided that it was time to separate, to go somewhere else, to put distance and space and time between him and what was taking place. So they went to a place called Gethsemane. It was a garden. And Jesus had gone there before, because separating and putting distance between stress and overwhelmed and himself was something Jesus did often. There were times where he would separate himself from the demands and expectations of the crowds that would gather around him. There was even a time where, in the middle of a storm, in the middle of a lake, Jesus is laying in the middle of the boat, fast asleep. He separated himself from the circumstances. He was able to do this in ways that helped him navigate these seasons or these circumstances. And so but notice that Jesus doesn't do this alone. He takes with him some of his followers. It says they went. Now, Jesus probably at this time had a fairly significant sized group of followers. But most scholars believe that he took 11 of his 12 closest followers with him. So not everyone who followed Jesus went to the garden. And not everyone who went to the garden actually went in the garden. It says 8 of them stayed at the gate. He went and told them, sit here, wait here while I pray. And then 3, he decided to take further into the garden with him. And Mark tells us he took Peter, James, and John along with him. And he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. So there are 3 who were a little closer to the circumstances. All of Jesus' followers had seen the intensity and the conflict between he and the Jewish religious leaders. But not all of them saw the depths at which it overwhelmed Jesus. And one of the things that we can pick up from what Jesus does here is that it's not always wise to share everything with everyone. Sometimes it's better to share more details with a smaller group of people than a larger group of people. Sharing too many details with a larger group of people usually doesn't work out well for us or for others. And so Jesus takes a larger group and then a smaller group and an even smaller group, and they begin to experience more and more at a deeper level of how these circumstances are affecting Jesus. While it's important to surround ourselves with a support system of people who genuinely care for us, not everyone cares at the same level and not everyone needs to know at the same level. And Jesus tells them clearly, he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. And then he goes on to communicate with those 3, Peter, James, and John, who went with him. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. stay here and keep watch. As Jesus communicates these words, the phrasing that he uses there is common phrasing from the Greco-Roman language for the deepest kind of grief and sorrow an individual can experience. It communicates the idea of an extreme torture of the soul. And Jesus has the ability here to just be honest about how he feels. He has the ability to be honest about how the circumstances are impacting him. Jesus was never known to be a complainer, and he certainly didn't go around making mountains out of molehills. But what he does do is find the ability to just be honest. He doesn't have to deny the reality of his circumstances, but he is able to share with those around him how deeply affected he is by these circumstances. Though Jesus takes a larger group and then a smaller group and then a smaller group, there comes a time for him where he needs to go on alone. And it says, going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. Jesus goes a little further into the garden because sometimes we just have to figure things out between us and God. And one of the things that we can learn from how Jesus navigates this circumstance is where he places his attention. He places attention on his circumstances because it's part of his circumstances that are overwhelming him. But notice that he goes a little further and he throws himself down on the ground, which is just another example of how he's willing to be honest with the impact of this situation on him in this moment. But then it says, he prayed, which is just a conversation with God. In simplest terms, prayer is just talking to God. And so Jesus goes and he places his attention on God. It doesn't require him to not pay attention or deny the reality of his circumstances. In fact, it's these very circumstances that he addresses with God. He says very clearly that if it is possible for this hour to pass from him. And what this hour is the conflict and tension between he and the Jewish religious leaders is ready to reach a boiling point. They have plotted and they have schemed and they have manipulated. And now they are set to arrest Jesus and to try him. And to attempt to put him to death. And Jesus knows this is coming. And he knows that the reason that this is coming is because sin has ravaged the world. And someone has to redeem sin and provide the path to right relationship with God. And in the hour that's coming, that's what Jesus knows is about to happen. And in the honesty of feeling overwhelmed, he says if this can pass from him, he'd prefer another way. He'd prefer another path that would redeem sin and restore right relationship with him. He is about to feel the weight of the sin of the world. And if it's all the same to him, he would prefer a different way. And Jesus, in his conversation with God, Mark records that he says, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Jesus addresses God in a very personal way here. The term Abba, Father, was a Jewish term that children used to address their dads. It was almost like them calling out Papa. It was a term of endearment. It was a term of relationship, but it was also a term of respect at the same time. However, the Jewish religious leaders, the Jewish people, would never use this term in reference to God. It was too personal. And they held a view of God that God was not that personal. So what we learn from Jesus in the way that he addresses God here is that God is deeply personal. And God cares deeply about us and about our circumstances. And that he is approachable in a very personal way. He is approachable about anything and everything. And Jesus says, Papa, Daddy, everything is possible for you. You know what I'm facing, and I know what you're able to do. And then he says very clearly, take this cup from me. A very specific request. The use of a cup in Jewish literature or in ancient literature was very common to express a deep kind of suffering and sorrow. Even sometimes a suffering and sorrow that was leading to death. It was, Jesus' use here also may connect to a criminal punishment where a cup of poison was given to a prisoner and they were required to drink it as a death sentence. Now, it was also common that a group of criminals could be lined up and they would be required to drink from the same cup of poison. However, if one of the criminals found favor in the eyes of the judge, the cup passed from him to the next, and his life was spared while the next's was not. And so when Jesus says, take this cup from me, he is asking God to spare his life. He is asking God to change his circumstances. He is asking God to find a different way to redeem sin and restore right relationship with God. Jesus is brutally honest with God. At the same time, Jesus pours out his circumstances to God, but he's willing to allow and to trust God to be God, even if his circumstances don't change. He says, take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. Okay, God, here it is. This is what I want. This is what I prefer. But at the same time, I know you know better than I do. And whatever is required to accomplish your plans and purposes is what I will do. Not what I will, but what you will. Now, you may be listening today, and you're not sure about the whole God thing. You're not quite sure you're ready to trust God, to be God, and to always be God. And one of the reasons why you may not be sure of the whole God thing is because you've faced circumstances that have been overwhelming. And you have been honest about your circumstances. And you have gone to God and asked for your circumstances to change. And nothing changed. In fact, maybe things got worse. And if the circumstances didn't change, if God didn't hear and respond the way you wanted God to respond, you're no longer sure that God is really God and that you can trust him to always be God. But Jesus found a way to put his attention on God in such a way that trusted God to be God. I wish that I had a better answer. And this isn't intended to be trite or dismissive or to minimize any of the experiences that have overwhelmed any of us. But sometimes the reason things don't change is because our world has been ravaged by sin. The way our world functions, the circumstances that overwhelm us, are not the way that God designed it, not the way that God intended it, but sin broke all of that. And as a result of living in a sin-ravaged world, sometimes we experience circumstances that overwhelm us, that never change, and sometimes get worse. But Jesus knew something that we would all be wise to embrace into our lives, and that is that just because our circumstances don't change doesn't mean God doesn't care. When we feel overwhelmed, it's easy for our heart to get so cluttered with things, with tension, with stress, with circumstances, with whatever else factors in to feeling overwhelmed, that there's no room for God anymore. But Jesus was able to make room for God because he knew that making room for God was the most effective way, and really the only effective way, of navigating the circumstances that overwhelmed him. Being able to do this allowed Jesus to exit the garden with a sense of calm and a sense of confidence. He leaves the garden and he engages with his followers, and the cup doesn't pass from him. In fact, as he exits the garden, the Jewish religious leaders are there, and they arrest Jesus, and they put Jesus on trial, and they convict Jesus in collaboration with the Roman government. And Jesus is sentenced to death, and he is executed on a cross. In the garden, Jesus asked for the cup to pass from him. In the reality of his circumstances, he took the full brunt of the cup of sin, yours, mine, and the sins of the entire world, to redeem sin and restore right relationship with God for all those who would put their trust in Jesus doing for us what we could never do for ourselves. When we feel overwhelmed, the most effective thing that we can do is to make room for God. And sometimes we just need to do the next wise thing. Like the guy in the pool, the next wise thing for him was to figure out which way was up, to grab the shoulders of someone and pull himself above the surface of the water and then gasp for air. Sometimes the next wise thing for us is to lean into the support system of those around us who genuinely care for us. Sometimes it's to put time and space between the circumstances and ourselves so that we can connect or reconnect with God. And sometimes it's a combination of both of them, but never at the exclusion of connecting with God. Life can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. There is a way to navigate circumstances while acknowledging the reality of the circumstances and placing our attention on and our trust in God. Let me pray as we wrap up our time together. Dear God, thank you for letting us know that we aren't alone when we feel overwhelmed. And thank you for letting us know that when we feel overwhelmed, there is a way to place our attention on you. Thank you for the times when this hour passes from us and the brunt of our overwhelming circumstances ease up. Thank you for the times when this cup of suffering passes from us. But also thank you that even when it doesn't, we know that you still care. And God, help each and every one of us to be able to determine the next wise thing and to take sometimes just one step at a time, not having to figure out the fifth next thing or the 15th next thing, but just figuring out the next thing to keep our heads above the water of overwhelming circumstances, to be able sometimes to just simply breathe in the midst of life's circumstances. God, we thank you for being you and for being a you that we can trust. So no matter how connected to you or disconnected from you we would describe ourselves, it is my hope that through this time together, each and every one of us will figure out more effectively how to take a step towards trusting you, no matter our circumstances. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, thank you for connecting for this installment of Straight Talk. Sometimes in our circumstances, we just need a little straight talk to navigate them. Next week, I hope that you'll connect with us again. You can connect with us online at 10 o'clock. And as of now, our plan is that you can also connect with us in person as we resume physical gatherings next Sunday. We are continuing to monitor the guidelines and the numbers of things as places start to open up. And so once again, the decision to resume physical gatherings is our plan, but can certainly change on short notice. And so again, we just ask for your grace and we ask for your patience and know that we will make the decision that is best for the well-being of every person who might enter these doors, and that we will communicate to you as quickly and as effectively as we can. Check out the preview video for next week's gathering, and I hope to see you then.